This is your tech news briefing for Friday, November 20th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. As the pandemic enters its ninth month in the U.S., and we're all looking forward to a time when we can once again celebrate holidays and milestones in person with our loved ones, all eyes are on the many companies working to develop vaccines. In particular, two vaccine candidates from the drug companies Pfizer and Moderna have shown promising early results. Both use a still unproven kind of technology called messenger RNA. And on today's show, we're going to take a deep dive into how it actually works. Our reporter Peter Loftus has been following the vaccine race, and he'll join us after these headlines. Yesterday on the show, we gave you an update on the battle between Apple and Epic Games over developer fees. That's the commission that Apple takes on purchases made through its App Store. As part of that fight, Apple kicked Epic's popular game Fortnite out of its App Store over the summer. But on Thursday, we learned that the graphics chip company NVIDIA is working to bring Fortnite back to people's iPhones, not via the App Store. NVIDIA launched a test version of a new platform on Apple's mobile operating system yesterday that allows people to play games through their Safari browsers instead of through apps. The chipmaker said that hundreds of games are available and that Fortnite will soon be added to the list. And one thing to keep an eye on, prices of Bitcoin have been climbing in recent days, and quickly. At the time of our recording, they're up around $18,000, close to the cryptocurrency's all-time high of just under $20,000, which it set a few years back in late 2017. There are a few reasons for the rise in price. Many investors see Bitcoin as a potential hedge against inflation. Governments have spent trillions to prop up their economies during the pandemic, and some investors fear that inflation will ramp up in the coming years. There's a set limit on the amount of Bitcoin that can be created, and that appears to be winning some people over, despite Bitcoin's volatility. Plus, more platforms like PayPal and Robinhood now allow cryptocurrency trading, which has been making Bitcoin more accessible to the average investor. All right, coming up after the break, the new type of tech that's powering the leading coronavirus vaccine candidates. That's next. Since the coronavirus emerged as a global threat, health authorities have heralded vaccines as one of the biggest keys to getting the world back to normal. In recent days, the drug companies Pfizer and Moderna have both come out with trial data showing their vaccine candidates to be more than 90% effective at preventing symptomatic COVID-19. Now, we should note here, these are early results, and there are still a ways to go before the Food and Drug Administration gives them the okay to start distributing the vaccines. But the results are especially notable because these aren't your typical vaccines. They're being seen as the first test of a technology called messenger RNA that's yet unproven, but which scientists have high hopes for in the future. So today, we're going to take a look at how that technology actually works with a little help from our reporter Peter Loftus. He covers drugs, medical devices, and healthcare for the Journal. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so my dad is a biology teacher, but I have to confess that I am a little rusty on my science. So in the simplest terms, can you just start by describing how a typical vaccine works?
Sure. Well, a typical vaccine might include a version of the virus or bacteria that it's targeting, either, say, a killed version of that virus or a weakened version of the virus. And that would be for shots like measles or certain flu shots. Or it might contain a protein or something that resembles a portion of the virus that's being targeted. And that's sort of like the technology that's used for pertussis vaccines, whooping cough. There's also other kinds that target bacteria. But basically, when it's injected into people, they set off an immune response where the body's immune system recognizes either the virus, the killed virus, or the live virus, or these other things I mentioned, and prepares a defense for if the person is later exposed to the actual virus. So things like antibody production and other aspects of the immune system.
But both of these vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna rely on a gene-based technology called messenger RNA. Again, in the simplest terms, how does this type of vaccine work?
Sure. Well, this works differently in that vaccines that use mRNA, they contain what are essentially the precursors to all the things I just mentioned. So they don't actually contain the virus itself or even proteins from the virus. But what they do contain is the genetic code from, say, the targeted virus or a portion of the virus. And that's the mRNA. And so these are mRNA, that's short for messenger RNA. These are forms of RNA that are naturally occurring in all people that basically have the job of enabling cells to perform a function, usually to make a certain protein. And so what they do with mRNA vaccines is they find some portion of the targeted virus that they think will be effective for a vaccine, and then they encode the vaccine with the genetic code so that when it's injected into the body, it enables the body's own cells to make a protein that would then set off the same kind of immune response that I mentioned earlier. So it's, in a way, it's sort of moving parts of the same broader process from outside the body to inside the body.
Got it. And there are two vaccine candidates, right? Pfizer and Moderna both have candidates. How do they differ from each other?
Well, they're very similar. I mean, and we've seen now in the past week that the real big number is the effectiveness, the efficacy. They're both right around 95%. The differences come in certain things, like they have different storage and shipping requirements. And so the Pfizer vaccine generally has to be stored long term and shipped at a colder temperature than the Moderna one. In both cases, they both have to be frozen at some point. It's just a different temperature between the two of them. There are some other small differences, but I think they're relatively similar, especially if you compare mRNA in general to other types of vaccines.
And are there limitations to mRNA tech? What are the drawbacks?
Well, one of the drawbacks, I think, is the novelty itself, because it is still a new technology. And really, it hasn't been fully proven. I mean, we still don't have authorization of these vaccines. And in fact, no mRNA vaccine in the past has ever advanced to the point of being licensed for use by regulators. So the science and the manufacturing process are less established than older methods, like growing viruses in eggs or cell cultures or brewing proteins in these big stainless steel bioreactors. Also, these I mentioned that the storage and shipping requirements, you know, those could pose logistical challenges. And there are other vaccines using older technologies that can be stored at higher temperatures. And so there's less of a challenge. And, you know, right now, even though the safety looks relatively good from the clinical trials we've seen so far from mRNA vaccines, there's less of a long-term track record for those than for older vaccines. So there's still a bit of a wait and see to make sure that they're okay.
I want to ask you, you know, the typical vaccine development process can take years. And yet this time last year, just 1 year ago, the coronavirus was probably not even on most people's radars yet. So how did we get two vaccines with over 90% efficacy, as we said in early results, in such a short time? And is that in any way a function of this new technology?
Well, for one thing, I think the companies that are involved, Moderna and BioNTech, was the one that brought our mRNA to the table in its partnership with Pfizer. They've been working on this technology for several years and were testing certain vaccines against other infectious diseases before COVID came along. And so the way that they've designed these, their mRNA technology, they call it a platform technology, in the sense that they feel like they have the basic building blocks in place for a new vaccine. And then if something new comes along, like the new coronavirus, they can relatively quickly find the genetic sequence associated with that virus and sort of plug it in and insert it into the base that's already been laid down. And so, and in addition to that, there was already a lot of work that was done, including by scientists at the National Institutes of Health, about the target to pick for these types of viruses. So there have been older types of coronaviruses in the past that have caused outbreaks, nothing as big as this, but it led researchers at the NIH to look into how can we best make a vaccine that targets that? And they found that if you focus on something called the spike protein, which juts out from the surface of many kinds of coronaviruses, that appears to have promise. And so when the new one came along, they looked at the new coronavirus, they saw the spikes, and they were in a position to relatively quickly say, we think a vaccine should target that spike protein. In Moderna's case, the NIH is working very closely with them, and they were able to provide that target, so to speak, relatively quickly. And so that got things moving along.
And as you mentioned, this is sort of a first test for this technology, but I understand that scientists have a lot of hope that mRNA can have a lot of uses far beyond this pandemic.
Right. Future applications would include vaccines against other infectious diseases. Moderna has been developing a vaccine against cytomegalovirus, which is a somewhat common virus that isn't harmful to a lot of people. But if a pregnant woman gets infected, her newborn could end up with health problems. The industry has been targeting a CMV vaccine for a while. And so Moderna thinks that mRNA technology could help advance things there. And then outside of infectious diseases, researchers are testing mRNA-based treatments for cancer, heart disease, certain rare diseases. The COVID news, I think, the data that we've just seen in the past week provides some validation for this approach in infectious diseases. Beyond that, it's a little less proven. I think it really remains to be seen as these other uses of mRNA are tested in people.
Our reporter Peter Loftus, thanks for your reporting.
Thanks for having me on.
That's it for Tech News Briefing this week. Chris Zinsley is our supervising producer. Kateri Yoakum is the executive producer of Wall Street Journal Podcasts. And I'm your host, Amanda Llewellyn. If you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. All right. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.